I don't want to leave.
But I gotta stay right there.
But I gotta go right now. Here we go.
Oh, I was scared.
You are now watching the Tessual Talk, hosted by AC and Simon Shorty.
Hit the right button.
All right, y'all. We are back. We are back.
Hit the like button.
Turn me up, guru.
I'm trying to tell you, my girl ate that down.
Let me see how you look in this camera real quick. I think you look good. Okay, perfect, perfect. But yeah, man, it's episode 219, and I have none other than Cyber Shorty in the building.
You got your girl in the house, y'all. Woo! Woo!
And then we got me in the building. What's going on, y'all?
We got HD in the house. Woo, 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 woo! I'm the hype crowd, y'all. I'm the hype crowd.
All right, so let me try to see if I can put these topics up. I'm going to put you up, and then let me get these topics up real quick. All right, so some of the topics we got today is McKesson breach, ID scan is cooked, Gen Z versus the boomers, revoking access when people quit, and no more AI in New York.
Woo woo. Wee, like a cop car.
Let me see. But before we get into all that, though, let me put it back on us real quick. It's a new week. How you been?
I've been delicious this week. I was off.
Yeah, but I ain't never heard nobody say I've been delicious.
I've been delicious. I have been mostly off of this week. Me and my lovely wife of mine were supposed to be in Hawaii, but we have a short dog, and she had some medical experiences which required emergency surgery for her, so coming right outside of that two-week frame ruined, not in ruin, but it did intrude upon our 2-year wedding anniversary. And so I decided that I didn't want to leave my baby with nobody. I don't want to leave my baby with nobody. If she not feeling like herself 1,000%, like, I don't want her to tear, rip, pull her stitches. So I just decided, let's just be local, let's just stay home and just kind of keep eyes on her. And it 1,000% ruined the mood and the vibe. But I'm not mad or, like, upset that I chose that, because it was, like, kind of a mutual thing. But we would have more rather been in Hawaii. Who wouldn't have? You know what I mean?
Did you say Hawaii or July?
No, Hawaii. We were supposed to go to Honolulu.
Okay, we had to make sure we got you out for what the people was thinking about.
We've been to Hawaii before, but we were on Kauai.
Did you surf?
Please, I can't even swim. Please, but even though I can't swim, I'm bold enough to be like, get out there.
I'm
bold enough to put on a life jacket and go on a jet ski.
Oh, really? It was a white guy that made a joke. He made a joke about black people.
As soon as you said jet ski, you lost me. I promise you. My wife knows there are a couple things that I'm not, in better language, doing. And one of those is a jet ski, because I can't swim. So don't ask me to go on any jet skis, because I don't want to give you the alarmness in your chest. And if I'm dating someone who can't swim, I'm going to give them an anxiety attack, because I am the type of woman that wants to go on vacation, and even though she can't swim, I'm going to put on that life jacket.
You should take swim lessons.
I am, but I ain't got there yet. But I will jump off a cliff in the middle of nowhere to meet my best friend. I promise you, I would. And that's why it's important to have people that push you past your limits, because my friends pushed me.
Okay, for one.
They pushed me past my limits. You swim?
A little bit.
Can you float?
Probably.
I'm dying.
When I moved out here 10 years ago, I took swimming lessons.
I would die.
But
high five. You have kids. Because that was the right move to make. I'm telling you.
We're about to put them in swimming lessons, though.
But they can understand getting their face wet is okay. If my face gets wet, I feel like I'm going to die. And I'm not saying that on no, I'm not no diva, y'all. Like, I'm not the most girly-girliest, like, dental needing woman. No, like, I'm very straightforward. If we in the country, we in the country. But, like, something about my ears and my face and my nose and my mouth getting wet, it just scares me.
Yeah. What's funny is when you said Kawhi, I thought about, so Childish Gambino, for people who don't know who that is, that's Donald Glover, he has a album called Kawhi. And he got a song.
He does? I didn't know that.
He got a song called Pop These. I think I could play, you know what? This actually is not monetized, so I could play this a little bit. Let's see some. Really quick. I'm going to play like 15 seconds of it.
Me.
But it just sound like you're in Hawaii.
Now that we have found this love, baby, I can't explain my feel.
Well, I may just leave this for the Patreon.
Now that we have found this love, baby, I've never felt this real. Loving you is all I know, baby.
Never heard this, have you? You know nothing about this.
You make me feel so high. I'm a lyrics girl, so let me hear it.
I just wanna feel your love, baby. You know I'm down the right.
Came out 2014. So, hackers claim millions of patient records stolen from healthcare giant McKesson. Healthcare and pharmaceutical distribution giant McKesson disclosed a major cybersecurity incident involving unauthorized access to third-party cloud environments. Extortion group Shiny Hunters claimed to have exfiltrated roughly 1 terabyte of data containing 284 million records and issued a $55.2 million ransom demand.
Let's do this, Johnny!
Hang on. So, this is how they got in. Shiny Hunters reportedly breached McKesson using phishing and social engineering against employees. Attackers impersonated internal IT support to trick workers into approving Okta single sign-on logins, granting immediate access to McKesson's cloud data repositories in Salesforce and Snowflake. The headline figure of 284 million patient records reflects raw database roles across data warehouses, not 284 million unique people. A single patient can generate dozens of roles, but the true unique patient count is likely in the tens of millions, though the exposed scope remains massive. So data allegedly exfiltrated from McKesson's oncology and multi-specialty and medical surgical business units includes full names, addresses, social security numbers, medical records, prescription logs, diagnosis, and treatment notes. That's crazy.
Okay. When you're done. Tell me when you're done.
I got you.
Okay.
So they was exposing cancer treatment histories alongside personal identity. Markers give bad actors hyper-targeted material for convincing follow-up scams. So McKesson confirmed the cyber incident, third data party exfiltration and service disruptions, but has not independently verified Shiny Hunter's specific claim regarding the 284 million database roles or the total size of the breach. Distribution centers remained operational and core order processing systems were kept online without shutting them down. So, how the hacker still pulling off basic phishing attacks against the enterprise employees to hijack Okta SSO tokens? And when high-value patient data is centralized across cloud platforms like Snowflake and Salesforce, does identity management become the single point of failure for healthcare security? And lastly, should identity providers force FIDO2 hardware keys by default for corporate accounts to make phishing completely ineffective? Is I went and looked up FIDO2, and it's
a FIDO2 keys.
Yeah, open. It's an open authentication standard that allows users to log into apps and websites securely without using traditional passwords. And let's see, it relies on two main technical specifications. Web authentication and client-to-authenticator protocol, a protocol that lets external devices like a USB security key or your smartphone communicate login credentials to your computer. So I wonder if this is similar to pretty much being like passwordless. Everybody is implementing passwordless. So and how it goes is, let me see where I'm at. So typically how it will go is you log in, password, you get an Okta prompt sometimes, or it may, if you're on like your corporate network, it'll go bypass Okta and then it'll go to like your other identity platform for like passwordless log on. and you got to have that application installed on your computer, and you've already logged into it, and so it will just it'll let you log on because it recognizes that. Now, when it comes to mobile, if you're trying to log on something on mobile, it's a little bit different. It's going to say, hey, go approve this in the other thing. So not Okta, but the other identity tool that you use. And so that's typically how that part works. But then also, like, I used to have an RSA token. You got to have it. It changes with the digits. Like, I forgot how long it changes, but you got to have it, and that'll sync up, and you can log on like that. Or you can use the YubiKeys and plug them into your device.
Yep.
So they're least likely to get hacked, but when there's a will, there is a way.
Okay, so today we have this first story. It is one angry dude with the keys. So someone is selling a copy of everyone's keys. And you know how you go about renting a car, or you walk into a dispensary or a gun shop or a check-in hotel. Somebody is going to then go ahead and scan your ID. Now, there is a company behind a lot of those scanners called ID Scan. And as of right now, there are lawsuits flying because a dark web identity theft service called Nexus was reportedly advertising access to more than 153 million U.S. and Canadian driver license scans, plus a million of ID cards, travel documents, even medical cards. So let's put you on the number. Now, this company not only got breached, they have your face, your address, your date of birth, your license number, and the exact stuff that you actually are needing to open accounts for in someone else's names. So let's say you are sitting on a criminal storefront. Now, ID Scan hasn't confirmed a compromise. They haven't said much of anything, if we're being honest. However, what we do have is investigative reporting from Brian Krebs, who verified samples by searching the database for his own records and records of people who agreed to it, and traced it back to ID Scan. So the FBI New Orleans? Mm-hmm. The FBI New Orleans office is investigating, and Reuters confirmed that independently, this is serious in source. The company's own count and confirmation aren't on the table yet. However, we are here to report the difference, and that is really what our job is. So on September 4th of 2026, building on Brian Krebs' September 1st report and Reuters' September 2nd confirmation of the FBI probe, the claim is that Nexus had advertised 153 million driver license scans, 10 million ID cards, 3 million travel documents, and 579,000 medical cards. Nexus is now offline, and criminals reportedly still hold the data. Who is ID Scan, you may ask? They are an identity verification company, hardware and software that scans and authenticates government IDs. Their systems are used in car rental agencies. Thank you. Gun shops, financial institutions, cannabis dispensaries, and hospitality. Lawsuits have been filed at this time in Louisiana, Markowitz, Stocks in DeMarco and Half. Attorneys are investigating some more class action face suits in that essence. But we are alleging that they are doing real work here. ID Scan has not confirmed its systems were compromised or the number of affected people. The 153 million figure. Originates from the criminal's advertisement in Krebs sampling, not an official disclosure of the situation. But what I think that is interesting is that you and me have been talking about identification, verification, and the risk that are becoming really, honestly, and truly like single points of failure for these companies. We're told that they don't store all these details, And then that same concentrated detail or information is still being supplied to vendors that we're using or that we are frequenting as business owners.
Yeah, I'll be definitely trying to keep up with this because ID scan, a lot of companies use ID scan. And like I said, it's always the thing, third party risk. It's a big one. And it's something that my GRC clients, I'm always telling them, like, hey, ask them about third-party risk and how they plan to keep up with that with AI and everything else.
But I think that instead of becoming more vulnerable, we're becoming less vulnerable because we're acknowledging and accepting, you know what, that do more than I thought it was going to do. Instead of, like, standing on business, like, you know what, that do too much.
Not
everybody.
Not vulnerable, I know what you mean. You mean, like, more accepting or more numb to it, like it's kind of like
the like the analyst.
Like I accept like
the security risk. Yeah.
So our risk appetite has gone up.
Yes.
So that's
and it's going to continue to go up.
Yeah.
It has to financially for it to make sense.
I agree. Now to have some fun, I want to get into Jubilee had this thing with like 20 boomers versus like a Gen Z politician. I don't know the guy's name, so. Whenever people watch this, they will know who the guy is. However, I do want to react to two of them. And I think the first one is the student loans joint. Where is it?
If we get rid of all the student debt,
yeah,
it's also going to put a burden on a bunch of people like Lori because, or myself, or
how do you
all
think you'd
of us.
Feel that? How do you think you would feel that burden? How would you feel that burden?
How would I feel or yeah. fill?
How would you feel that burden? You're saying that... Yeah, you're saying that tomorrow, if the United States forgave student debt, right, which isn't... We're not sending a check to people to buy things. We're saying we're forgiving you your outstanding balance. How would you feel that the day after, the year after?
I would feel it in the economy and the fact that there's a whole bunch of more imaginary money that showed up.
That's not what it
that's
is.
That's exactly
though.
What happened during COVID. A bunch of imaginary money showed
but
up.
But you're confusing
the inflation
it.
Went
student,
up.
But
right.
Thank you. Because it's what he is imagining it to be. It's not the reality.
No, he thinks it's the same as the government printing more money and giving people money that they weren't even making to rise inflation, and they figured out how to get it back through all the years. And I'm with him on that. Because I was one person, I didn't get no Trump checks.
I did, but it wasn't a lot like everybody else got.
No, I made too
it was
much.
Trump change.
So I didn't like. I think I don't even know if I even got a because you even did the weekly checks and there was another check that people would get. I forgot what it was, but I didn't. I think I may have got one and it wasn't a full amount. Okay.
Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
Student debt isn't the Federal Reserve printing more money. It is forgiving an outstanding balance. And you're right, you would feel it in the economy because an entire generation of people would have more income to be able to use to buy a home, to start a family, to buy more goods, and it would actually help our economy. But it is not, canceling student debt is not printing money. It's not forgiving, or it's not printing money. It is just forgiving.
It's writing off something. So, it's taking a ledger and writing it off.
How would you? And so my question to you is, how would you feel that?
I would feel it because there's like numbers on a ledger.
No, but how would you feel it in your life?
How would I feel it in my life?
How would you feel it?
Well, I will tell you, my wife's debt actually got totally relieved by Joe Biden.
How did that? Did that help you guys?
It did.
What were you able to do with the extra money?
My whole point is, how does it make you feel? And he was the guy that was answering the question, felt some type of way, but he would not be honest about. And that's what it is. It's, do you want to pay for this shit now or later? That's the
everybody's already paying for it because the thing that the boomers are actually being disingenuous. But like the whole thing, I didn't even watch. I've seen clips. Every boomer, and it's I got to say this too. Every white boomer that was on there were being disingenuous with the questioning because they know for a fact it was easier.
Because they felt like they shouldn't have been answered or asking
these
or
people,
answering those questions because they were too far ahead
man,
in their careers.
Man, these are the same people who could have went and worked at Sears, worked at a factory, worked wherever they wanted, bought a 3-bedroom house, took care of a family.
And did it.
And could have did it off of regular
salaries.
But
they salaries. Chose to do...
I'm going
to
back it up for them. What they are forgetting is the prices of what... housing and everything costs now has outpaced salaries much more. Like, there is not even a, what you call it?
A what?
A comparison. It's a guy that I follow on here. What's his name? It's a white guy. But he always does a comparison of, like, the average house in 1990 or 1980 versus 90. The average house in 2026. And saying, hey, you need an income of $100,000+ to afford this house versus back then you could make $30,000 and buy the same house, if not bigger, and take care of your family.
This is our fault, meaning boomers. We're the ones that created the participation trophy. Once we did that, we started teaching our children they didn't need to be held accountable. Okay. And when we started doing
that. My parents didn't teach me that.
No, but whoever taught you, you have repeatedly been using the phrase, we were told.
Yeah.
Okay. What that says to me is, I don't have a brain and I can't be held accountable for my decisions.
Do you think it doesn't matter what?
And I must interject.
I can see how far he's going to take it. I'm not mad at how far he's taking it. But in a black household, you don't get to take it that far.
No, not even that. He's being obtuse. He knows exactly.
Great word.
When we say we were told, he knows exactly what that means. Hey, we were in school and they advised you had to go to school to do these certain jobs. They also stopped having, like, when my dad was in school, my dad finished high school in 1982. I went to school in 2010, 2006 to 2010 for high school. They had shop. They had welding. They had wood shop. The girls had home economics and all these other things you could have trade-wise. That same school I went to, Huntington High School, Shreveport, shout out to y'all. When I was in school, we were the only school. We were the only school in the parish that had wood shop and welding at the school. Nobody else had to. They had to go to a thing called, the Career Center if you want to pursue that trade. But that's another reason why you're talking about some, well, I can't use my brain. This and that. It was like, no. On top of a lot of these cities, too, they used to be like, our city used to be a manufacturing city. They had all these different jobs. A lot of people, right around the time I was finishing with school, GM was pretty much shutting down their plant. And that plant, especially for black people, a lot of black people, pretty much started suburbs out there in Shreveport from working at GM. High-paying jobs. So when they say that, they're being disingenuous because you know exactly what's going on, but you just want to say that, hey, nobody using common sense. Because keep in mind, we still need people to be doctors. We still need people to be therapists and psychiatrists, dentists, and all these things. But these things cost money. But then they'll tell you, oh, you should have thought better. No, I want to do this. Of course, nobody has regulated how much college should cost, especially for public universities from private universities. So what happens is the loans was pretty much giving you a loan for whatever school cost versus you couldn't go to the same loan company and say, hey, I want to start a business. I want a hot dog stand. Give me a $10,000 loan. You would get denied.
They have to know where that money's coming from and going to.
So I just wanted to say that. Let's go.
A nation's adults. Parents, school system tells their children when they're growing up?
If you're old enough to vote, we're assuming you are capable of making intelligent decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're talking about what people are told since they get into school as young people. And what I'm trying to tell you is that we've been told to go to college, to get the degree, you're going to get the loans, it's okay, because you'll get a good job where you'll be able to pay it off. And guess what? It's not true anymore.
Well, I don't know who told you what, but what I told my kids, two of who went to college and graduated and paid their student loans off, as I did, I told them, if you're going to go to college, make sure you pursue a subject that's going to pay you enough that you can pay off your loan.
Now, I agree. As you say it, hang on, as Destiny always says. No, that's not it.
Down.
So I will say he's right about that point. Like, you can go to college, go to a school that makes a major. I mean, make money. However, we can't negate that other. We still need those other professions that don't get a high income ceiling. So it's like a catch-22. I can tell people all day, yeah, go computer science, go be a nurse, go be an engineer. But everybody can't do that.
Yes.
And I say that all the time. It's like when people want to think of absolutes. Like, I know for a fact everybody can't come be in tech. They don't want to put the work in. Everybody can't work in the oil field. It's a lot of stuff that everybody cannot do. So I agree with him when he said that, but I mean, we just got to be honest here when he says things like that.
Yeah.
And guess what? They did not take basket weaving or gender studies.
Well, the vast majority of people are not taking gender studies, so you're kind of taking a small group. But they're
not taking. No, I'm not.
No, they are. The vast majority of degrees are in these
STEM
for professions where you can go. Actually, you know what? We also told a whole generation to do what? Learn how to code. Do you know what the number one job being hemorrhaged now because AI is?
Yes,
coding. So it so it's important because what we've told people to do sometimes doesn't match up with the reality of where we are. That's why I think this policy is good.
But if you teach people accountability
is important.
When things don't go right, like all of a sudden coding isn't working, if they're accountable for their actions, they deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you guys go, I'm going
to
make another excuse and mommy, help me. That's ridiculous.
And I'm talking about that's ridiculous. Most people don't have a mommy to help them. That's the only reason why the stuff ain't paid now. So I don't understand the process of him saying
that he can't work those hours or whatever it may be.
So I don't know. I think that I know at one point they thought I honestly thought like somebody would try to get rid of him, but I don't think it ever worked. Like for whatever reason, and I already know it's behind the scenes big business. You got like the SoFi's and all these different companies that they seen these messages about, oh, consolidate your loans with us and all that stuff because it's big business. They're gonna get paid off that. So that's the whole reason. If it wasn't money to be made out of people going to school, they would not care. And mind you, I did myself with the Department of Education, and somehow now it's with AidVantage.
I feel like how do you make sure that you have the right components in place?
What you mean by that?
To start a new triangular volume, for example. Like, you need to know some decisions to start to get the ball rolling, you know?
I'm saying about when you talk about going to school or what?
Yeah, like going to school, getting your degree.
But yeah, like I agree with him. I don't think you should be going to underwater basket weaving and all this and gender studies. Of course not. What's the other one that people like to do? General studies. No. But if you pick a major, it should at least help you be able to have a livable wage, number one. Number two, just because the school you went to, the tuition shouldn't be so sky high that you got to rob Peter to pay Paul to pay your loans back. That's what I'll just say when it comes to that part. As well as, like I said, the rest of the boomers, some of the stuff that they were talking about when it came to people not being accountable and all this other stuff. I'm just like,
those are like things that you can work on in your inner relationship.
Well, not even that. Let's take a step further. Some of these people aren't able to get jobs. So it's about being accountable. If from once you've been in high school and college, they told you to go to school, but then when you got out of school, you can't get a job. I've always said most majors should have a clinical so that you have some type of actual working history to say, I know how to do this, hire me.
Yeah.
So combined with that and everything else, when it comes to job searching, that is why these people can't find a job. Now, I admit it. Like you said, he had a great point when he talked about, oh, we tell people to go learn how to code, and look at that. Now, I will say he's right. I will say I still see software engineers getting hired because, yes, AI can code and stuff like that, but that don't mean it's right.
Yeah.
So understanding the know-how behind the script, behind the code still matters. So I still would say a computer science degree is very good because you still can pivot and do other things. So don't let the people tell you not to do it because you'll learn a lot of stuff. And at the least, you'll be qualified for the role if it says, hey, need a degree to do this role.
Yep.
Because what happens to a lot of people is they don't have the degree, so they are not qualified to do the role based on the minimum qualifications for the job. And that is kind of what I will leave y'all with. All right, so Thomson Reuters disclosed a major security breach in its C-Track court management software, exposing sensitive judicial records, social security numbers, medical files, and sealed court documents across 11 U.S. states and international jurisdictions. The breach occurred within backup databases provided to the vendor for system troubleshooting, development staging, and vendor support environments frequently lack the monitoring, encryption, and access control applied to production systems, making them vulnerable targets. Unsanctioned access to sealed court files pose severe real-world safety risks, potentially compromising confidential informants, protected witnesses, sealed indictments, and proprietary corporate litigation. Judicial bodies cut remote access and force credential resets across affected systems to isolate the vendor's connection and prevent further unauthorized data access. Software vendors often require real-world data sets to reproduce complex software bugs. How can vendors balance effective troubleshooting with strict data sanitization? So the questions are, is why are enterprise vendors still pulling in raw, unmasked production data containing PII into vendor support and troubleshooting environments? And what happens to public trust in the legal system when court-sealed documents fall into the hands of an unknown threat actor? I think that's interesting.
It wasn't bad.
The fact that C-Track Court Management System. Let me actually look up some stuff about that. Let's see. What is that? Does everyone use that? Let's see. So C-Track is a comprehensive court case management system created by, also, of course, created by Thomson Reuters. And it is, let me see what else. So it's only 11 U.S. states. So I wonder what did the 11 U.S. states that got breached have or didn't have turned on that the other, 50 minus 11, what is that, 39?
Probably forensics.
So unauthorized file access. I'm probably going to be something simple like MFA to be to be straight with you. C-Track adapts to your court's unique rules and critical processes. Rules can be changed quickly and easy. Evolve with technology, processes cases faster, reduce internal workload. So, I mean, yeah, it looks good, but at the same time, this is the thing I want to know if it's on Thomson Reuters or is it on the court systems? Because the fact that
it's on the court systems.
If it's not 50 states and it's only 11, it's going to be somewhere in the middle where people are trying to figure out, all right, who's this actually on?
Yeah.
The crazy thing is, like, being in one of them states where now people know what's in your case that wasn't supposed to be out, stuff that was sealed, all those different things that they shouldn't have known, now people know because of the whole breach. So, I don't know. I think that's crazy. I will try to keep up with it just because it's one of those interesting things, similar to, like, I saw another article about Flock that I didn't bring up because it seemed like we talked about Flock like the last couple of episodes.
Last few episodes.
But I do know, I think Texas and Florida are trying to get rid of Flock, trying to get them out of there. But I know why, but I also understand, like, hey, if it's not going to be Flock, it's going to be another company that come right behind it that's going to say, hey, we do things differently and you can't do all this stuff with our platform. So please believe this is going to happen. But let me see. I know you wanted to talk about X Money, so
X Money.
Let me. Did you get a? Well, I know I got a thing to sign up for X Money, and I thought it was actually asking me to sign up for like a payment from like my tweets have been doing good recently. So I was like, okay, shoot, X finna pay me some money. But then I realized it's just like another bank account, and I was like, I'm good. Even though I get good interest and stuff like that, I was like, I'm good.
So, new block, slight vibe shift. So, this one is how fast the wolves show up the second there's money on the table. X, the app formerly known as Twitter, just announced X Money, their payments services. Bank cards, 3% cash back, instant payments, the whole digital bank starter pack. And immediately people started getting hit with waves of unsolicited password reset emails. So, for example, why is my inbox full of reset password messages that I have never asked for or to? X's own engineer said it out loud. Attackers apparently figured X's money's live now. Let's see whose accounts we can get into. Now, good news, and I want to be precise. X says so far they found no evidence of an actual breach. The real backed up by their AI Grok is that it attracts attackers that are mass triggering the password reset form using public supernames. So it's more like someone is rattling every doorknob on the street to see which ones are unlocked not somebody who's already inside. Now, your takeaway here, and it is the most actionable thing on the menu, is to turn on two-factor authentication, X even published password reset protection, which money enters the chat. So your login stops being a social media platform or account, and it becomes a false account, meaning that you can treat it like one. So you don't have that many folks or feelings that are kind of being impressed upon.
So what's happening with X Money is similar to what happens to all accounts. People can figure out emails and just try to hit reset password and see if you go for it. So, yeah, he's right. There's no technical breach. It's just maybe they know your stuff is on the dark web somewhere or whatever. And so that's exactly what's happening right now. And if you do not recognize the reset, don't answer it. You possibly can go in and probably change your email to X. I'm not for sure. I have to try that out and see if you can do that and to try to mitigate it. But like I said, most of everybody's stuff has been included in the breach, so people are still going to keep on trying. And especially, I didn't sign up for X Money, but I got the notification to sign up for it, so I don't know if you get to use a different email address for it. So I'll try to go do some reconnaissance on that.
Yeah.
Figure that out and then see exactly how it's happening. But I saw so many people posting about X Money. I would say don't post about X Money. If you're using it, just use it. Unless they're paying you to post about it, don't post about it because you're going to be a heightened target. And I know for a fact that X Money security controls are not going to be as good as a JP Morgan, a Capital One, a Wells Fargo, a Bank of America.
The salary is definitely like kind of cut in half.
PNC, whoever you want to talk about, their stuff is not going to be as good as those banking companies. So having said all that, tread lightly, make your money, and stay in peace. That's what I would tell you to do. I would say for the people to do not, like I said, do not click on anything. Password fatigue. So they probably are not getting the right password. So for example, if they had the right password, then they would possibly be getting a prompt. And so you can either get an email or you can get your authentication.
Two-factor.
But with X, you're not an enterprise user, you're not getting a push. If you're an enterprise user, you'd be getting a push.
You could be getting a push, but it doesn't mean it's right.
No. But what I'm saying is with the push is that people keep on trying to log in over and over again, so you get tired to hit allow.
Okay.
So that's the definition of MFA fatigue. Yeah. Many of companies have been taken down like that. So having said all that, if that's happening, then you should be all right. You just do not need to entertain it. Change your password, change your email, and go on about your day and see how you can live to see another day with that being said. Now, it's one of my favorite times of these sessions. Matter of fact, let's do a pattern disruption real quick. I remember you told me about, you wanted to talk about what do you like to spend money on?
Yeah, immediately, yes. Ease and access and not having to do certain things. So not having to dust, not having to maybe sweep or mop, maybe not having to... I don't like doing a lot of things that are domestic. So I'm not even going to lie. Like, it's not one thing.
Really? So you don't like washing dishes?
No, I don't like washing dishes. I don't like doing any of that.
You don't like doing laundry?
No.
You don't like the smell of clean?
Yeah, I don't like to do it, but
so y'all definitely got the cleaners coming every 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then there's like a full list. I'm trying to like give her a consistent list and not give her new things every list. But it is very, difficult.
Yeah.
Starting out. It's not difficult to like, this my business been in my house for 10 years. I know, you know what I mean? It's not difficult there. But when you kind of are starting out, it's just like those little things that you know you don't have to do. You can do them, but you don't have to do them.
Yeah. That kind of stuff make you feel like you're rich when you got cleaners. When I stayed with my aunt, she had cleaners. She'd be like, hey, the cleaners come to one just before you leave. Just take the sheets off the bed.
You know what I mean? But like, I can wash my own laundry. I don't want you to do my laundry. I don't care. I don't want you to do my laundry or like necessarily fold up my laundry unless it's sheets. Like if it's towels or like sheets, cool. But like underwear and like workout clothes and like daily.
If they want to do it.
No, but I don't want you in my panties.
You bringing up laundry.
Why are you in my panties?
But you bringing it
up—that's a violation.
But you bringing it up made me think about who invented the term "loving somebody's stinky drawers."
It's not even that they—it's not even about them being stinky. It's just about the privacy or the sacredness.
I'm not talking about. I'm not talking about your drawers.
Oh,
I'm saying in general. In books, and then black people. I don't think white people say this, but like saying, "Oh, they love your stinky drawers" or whatever. Like,
we typically know our drawers don't really stink because we're hardworking people.
But I'm trying to see why did they have to put. Like,
I don't know. I guess that's too like, far for me.
I would say maybe it had to do with a lady, initially was doing the laundry and like doing the stinky drawers, and she still love them, because it is love to watch somebody's stinky drawers. That's love.
Watch them. What are we watching them do? Get up out of here.
Not watching. Washing.
Oh, washing.
I think that's love. Yeah. Especially if you got a blue collar.
Because you can wash someone's clothes and not have a deep desire in your heart to wash their clothes. Like, laundry is not my favorite thing to do, but I'm going to do it to get it over with.
You know, there's people that do actually services that they.
You keep pulling up more. Don't. Bring up nothing else. Every time I'd be like, it's somebody I could be like, you know what? I don't like washing dishes, but I can dry them. Would be like, you know, it's a dry washing service. Are we doing, HD?
There's a mobile.
Are you trying to spend my money?
Yes.
Unspend it.
There's a woman. I don't know if she.
Why she got to be a woman?
She go back home. Well,
I don't care. Why she got to be a woman?
Because she is. It probably men
name
do it
a
too.
Man. Name I don't, a man.
But you know what?
Name a man.
I don't think y'all would trust name men to man. Do y'all laundry.
I wouldn't. Okay, not never, but like you have to know how to do laundry.
No, y'all just wouldn't. Y'all would think
because
weird.
Okay, example.
But it's like mobile laundry service.
I'm gonna ask you a question. When you wash whites, do you have more than one load of types of whites that can be washed?
It depends, right?
Exactly.
You can have your delicates, or you can have.
Your very expensive white t-shirts that were $100, $8, $75, you're not going to put them in the same load of laundry as your towels.
No. Towels get washed by themselves.
Thank you. That's my whole point. So there are levels to this laundry madness.
Yeah. And delicate.
And I'm not saying that for me, the levels are giving me more work. Do I want that? No.
But see,
I don't want more laundry.
Here's a weird quirk about me. Stuff that has a time limit on it helps me say, okay, I can go get this and done.
Okay, laundry, no. Okay, I moved. The laundromat. The people who are doing laundry at the laundromat have won at life. They can finish their whole, most times, if, you know, they can get an open washer and dryer amongst 3-4 loads. You can finish a whole load in an hour.
Yeah.
In an hour. Do you know how long that takes somebody back home?
Hey, that is why.
I didn't know that until I went to the laundromat, because, you know, I'm not really a laundromat girl.
But that's why it's a genius investment.
I crashed out.
If you have, listen, you listen to this.
I was like, in an hour?
If you have money to spend, buy a laundromat, it will make the money back. Laundromats, regular old school car washes where you got to wash the car yourself. Those things will make the money back.
Okay, what do you think about chips in a laundromat being $1? I'm having a big problem with that.
That's better than that.
The
market downstairs.
Hear me out.
You know how much that costs?
Hear me out. I put 50 cents in that machine, and my chips was going to come forward. Guess what? Stuck. And I was, AG, you know I'm ghetto. But I was trying not to be ghetto in that laundromat. I was trying to hit it with my hip. Trying to, you know, guide.
You gotta rock the machine. Rock the machine. You gotta rock the machine.
How far are you taking your refund?
$1. I'm not going that far. About $1.
Okay, $2. $5.
I'm not. I'm just gonna charge you the game.
I'm finna buy another bag of chips, and I'm finna get two for the price of one.
If you really feeling like that, just get the Uber your chips to you.
What?
Uber the chips.
Just like an Uber?
Yeah.
Like a DoorDash
order? And tell them to come to the laundromat.
You know I know everything about a DoorDash.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, pause real quick. Queso or salsa? Real quick, HD.
Queso.
You aggravate me every time I have to ask you a good question. You pick the opposite.
Queso good.
With no salsa?
I can take queso over salsa.
You're hungry.
No, you're hungry. That's why you asked me about it. I wasn't thinking about salsa or queso at all.
I'm thinking about salsa and chips right now.
We know. We know. I'm thinking about that popcorn they got at Jay Alexander's.
I'm thinking about those.
The popcorn be good.
No, what do I like there?
Artichoke.
Thank you. That's what I'm looking forward to. You know what? When we get ready, let me know so I can put our order in. So we can just pull up and get it.
Okay, let me do this unrevoked access real quick. When you look at me, I know you see a 15-year-old standing in do. Proof to the studio. Dun, dun, dun. I ain't never had nobody to braid my hair.
Come on in.
But I never grew my hair. I never could stand to grow my hair.
You had puff buffs? You was tweaking. You didn't even have puff buffs. You was tweaking.
No, you mean dum-dums?
Like the little, yeah.
I never liked growing my hair out, so I always cut it.
So you never had braids.
I had plaits one time.
Like plaits. Like plaits.
It was
No. For the black people who don't know, what is a plait?
I mean, it's kind of like braids, ain't it?
No.
Except you can take them out.
It's a single braid.
Yeah.
It's a single braid, not to the scalp.
It felt good though.
No, you have to tell people because there's women who can braid, but they cannot French braid. A scalp braid is a French braid is a French braid. If you cannot braid to the scalp and include hair on your journey in braiding, that is just a braid.
Yeah.
It's like a singular braid.
But I saw why people like to get braid. Well, I saw why men like to get braid because it actually feels good.
No, it don't.
Y'all be going to the Africans, they put 5 people in your head.
I need nothing but 2. I just don't even need 2.
But they be putting all them people in your head.
I don't play that.
Maybe tearing their edges out.
Oh my God, I'm not finna deal with
you. You know I know.
I'm not finna deal with you.
You know I know. Let me get back to this thing real quick. Let's do this, Johnny. All right, so a disgruntled ex-employee wreaked massive financial havoc on their former employer because the company failed to revoke their system access upon termination. Many organizations rely on manual IT tickets triggered by HR when an employee is let go outside standard business hours during massive layoff events, or through poor cross-departmental communication. Accounts remain active in Active Directory, M365, and VPN concentrators. Unlike external attackers who must perform reconnaissance, an ex-employee knows exactly where unencrypted backups, critical databases, and administrative consoles live. They also know what triggers security alerts and how to bypass internal detection controls. Financial damages go beyond missing data. Organizations face costs for forensic incident response teams, legal fees, public relations, regulatory fines, and operational downtime while rebuilding destroyed infrastructure. So, is it fair to blame IT when HR fails to notify them of a termination? No, it is not. This is when you are doing interviews and they talk about how good are you at cross-collaboration and all that kind of stuff. IT, it's not only just the IT thing. This is the IT security thing. And then if you have a campus, if you're not fully remote, this is a physical security thing. It's a couple of things they need to do. If they got a badge, access needs to be revoked. If they have an endpoint device, it needs to be contained. The people who work in IT for Active Directory and all these other apps, because everything should be linked. It should be
Should be like a panic. Like, oh my God, it's 4 of us. HD, you still here? Courtney, you here? Lisa, you here? Sam, you here? If those 4 people are not here, it should be a big panic. I don't know.
But going back to what I was saying, it should be instant. It should be automatic.
Yeah. I mean, a part of your account lifecycle management process.
So if it's not automatic, then hey, because your security team typically supposed to be 24/7, they can help facilitate that with your IAM team, with your physical security team, and anybody else you need to delete access to. Because, like, fun fact, when I left Optiv, I still had access to CrowdStrike University.
For how long?
Years.
Years.
I probably still got access to it. And I left them in 2021. And so I used to go on CrowdStrike University and learn some stuff. And I used to actually give the logins to my clients. I'm like, hey, I ain't never cut my access to CrowdStrike University. Here y'all go. Because the thing is, you can't get access to CrowdStrike University unless you are enterprise.
Yeah.
So if you're not an enterprise user, you can't get access to it. So that's one of the things that's gatekept between all the stuff. That's why I still recommend Big M for people, because at least they'll let them get access to their tools for the FREE,
yeah,
the free ski. So how do you balance graceful offboarding for amicable departures with instant hard cutoffs for high-risk terminations? To be honest, man, I don't know if people have seen that foolish video with Ja Rule and Ashanti. You got to touch them on the shoulder and say, you got to go home.
I mean, no, you but you, go home. Especially if you know that your company is not strong. If you have somebody on your team that is a stronger participant than what the work culture is, it does really, really, really complicate things for you.
Yeah, no, I totally agree on that one. Let's see. While we are here, let me go into some of the fun stuff we like to do. So here's one. It said, yesterday I had a job interview. I'm proud that I walked out 3 minutes in. I am a student, and I was looking for some part-time work to earn some money on the side. I applied for a receptionist job for a spa. I had to take a bus to get there and then walk through a shopping center, walk along a road without a sidewalk, and then walk through a parking lot. I was asked to take a seat. When I arrived, I did. I had a shirt and jeans on. I asked if they had a dress code. They said jeans and t-shirts are fine. I was putting on a cardigan when a lady came to meet me. She side-eyed me immediately. Bombastic side-eye. We start the conversation. I asked her if there's an easier way to get there from the bus stop. She shrugs and says, I don't know what to tell you. It's the only bus stop around. She then studies my CV that she seemingly hadn't looked at prior to this. At least it didn't look like it. She asked me if I was happy to commute to work. I said it depends on how the shifts are allocated. If it's twice a week, I'd be happy to do it. She told me such questions aren't relevant before I even know if I had the job. I was supposed to do the interview and maybe stay for an hour to see how things operate. So the whole experience was supposed to be 2 hours, interview included. I can tell she wasn't warming up to me. I told her she doesn't seem to like me as a candidate. She asked what I meant. I said I could feel there was an issue. She said, well, I think it's very inappropriate to start an interview without asking for a better way to get here. I asked, genuinely, you really think so? I told her I thought I'd just ask, you work here, know the area, and Google sometimes. Send me the wrong way. She said, yes, it was inappropriate. I told her in that case, I think it's best if we end the interview. She said, okay. I wished her a nice evening and left. I have 9 years of full-time job experience prior to starting my degree. I've gotten every job I've ever wanted.
Nine?
Right. Either I'm completely wrong about what's an inappropriate question, or she had already decided she didn't like me. I knew from her demeanor I didn't want to work with her. So I will say,
I'm going to agree with him and with the whole appropriate, inappropriate type of thing. You don't know how you're going to rub people. And he didn't, I don't think in this scenario.
I think it's a she. Because they're talking about working at a spa.
I don't think they necessarily did anything that was like inherently like
volatile. It was kind of stupid.
It was immature, but I don't think it was anything to make you be like, I mean, there's a lot of things. If you let one thing throw you off from the end prize, which is to secure this job and get this employment, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's just a part-time for them. That's why they said 2 times a week is fine. Let me finish it. It's just frustrating to prepare for an interview and be met with frustration right off the bat. Most people who've interviewed me started the interview by asking me if I got there all right. I've always been honest, and it has never been a problem. Edit. I have now done in-depth research. They did stalking, crossed it out and said research, and found many a negative review. There's one that names her specifically, saying she can't be beat and listen. I guess listlessness. I guess you're saying listlessness. I don't know how you say it. And arrogance. She's also apparently worked there for 19 years. There's another one that says the guest didn't feel comfortable there because the boss was horrible to his staff. Most negative reviews say that the staff is horrible, the food is inedible, they have a gastro area, and the toilets are vile. There's also a rule that people can't bring food into the pool area, and if they do, they're asked to put it in the lockers and watch while doing it. I don't even know what to do with that info. This is a bullet dodged.
I think that trying to start your own family, and it can be a lot of different contexts that you're not used to. So I don't like that they don't really, I mean, it sounds like they're against a lot of things, and I'm not saying to be for a lot of things either, but relationships and kids.
No. She didn't mention kids.
Don't matter.
It do matter.
It don't.
How?
I'm thinking about all that goes into it. It's a lot. It's not. It's if you have to put kids in the equation and you take kids out, that's not a fair decision to make.
But I think the whole premise was the fact that they walked out like 3 minutes into the interview because they didn't feel the vibes.
And you don't have kids. That's why you walked out 3 minutes into
it. I agree, but I think they also already have a job.
Okay. So if you have like, a job, why are we having this conversation?
Because it's a part-time.
Okay, part-time.
It's a part-time. That's what he said. If I got to do it 2 times a week, I'm cool. That's why she said that like that. And it's like, hey.
But that's very rare that you're going to get a part-time job.
But think about this. No, it ain't. People get part-time jobs all the time. Think about Everybody Hates Chris. I don't need this. My man got 2 jobs. So that's probably the attitude they went with.
Okay, 2 jobs, any job.
But also, I think the fact that they did their research and just said, hold on, I know I can't be tripping. These people got to be rude. And they found out that I wasn't tripping. So I'm saying that to say that this person figured out that I didn't want to work there. A lot of other people didn't work there. The things they do is bad. The management treats everybody bad. So they did dodge a bullet after they did their research. And I think a lot of times you got to trust your gut. I think a lot of times people don't trust their gut, and that's how they find themselves into situations that they wouldn't mostly do if they had the choice to. So I would just say I think they made a good choice by deciding to not do that. Now, the other one is this is a good one. Help desk is getting in the way of career. Curious if anyone else has been in this position before. I've been in my current role for 3.5 years. Official title is IT support too, but it's really more of a tier 3 junior systems admin position. I just got passed up for a promotion after interviewing for an identity governance role for another internal IT support candidate. From what I found out, I had better knowledge of AD, Azure, Intra, SailPoint, and how they all interact, but the other person was better with APIs and that side of things. He vibe codes it all and can't do it without AI tools, but credit where credit's due. He's a killer at vibe coding, definitely beyond your average sales guy that clutches together a dashboard or whatever. The problem is now I'll be stuck training 2 backfields and wrangling out our inventory that has been neglected due to big mergers and other projects requiring more of our attention, plus low headcount. It's been only 2 of us supporting 700 plus users in this office.
Ooh.
I've done this sort of thing before. It does nothing for my career. It seems to only serve to further keep me stuck in help desk. The obvious answer might be, well, just do the minimum and use your time to educate yourself. But now I'd be stuck with 2 newbies, and it's not going to be as easy just to coast and learn job search. I also don't love the idea of being declined and then being stuck with more dirty work. I'll quit without having another job lined up in the past. It worked out since I do interview well, but that's quite a gamble. And that was a different job market. I've been applying to other support jobs in the meantime, since many of them would be a pay increase anyway. I guess I'm not sure what the next move is. Just looking for some advice from someone who has been in a similar spot who managed to break out of support. I can give more information or context if needed. Just don't want to ramble on any further. And then they said, edit. Tried to give context on the other candidate, but it just came across salty, so I removed it. They're using you. You're beyond help desk now. I agree. I have been there. Me and the same guy on the same team interviewed for the same role. I had more credentials. I was a better fit, but I was also better at our help desk job than him. So help desk wanted to keep me on help desk, and they let him go to the SOC team internally. And that pissed me all the way off because he didn't have the credentials I had. And I mean, he's my boy though. He cool. He been living it up, working overseas in Dubai for years and everywhere else. But I was just like, yeah, that ain't right. And that's when I realized I had to leave. So the person who posted this, you're not going to find what you're looking for until you leave. Because if not, 3.5 years turn to 6.5 years, turn to 7. And I have clients with the same type of thing. So you got to move around. You got to move around. That's what I would tell you. If you need help with that, hopefully you come across this video and we can help you with it. I don't want to leave.
But I gotta stay right there.
But I gotta go right now. I said,
but I'll be back for you.
What he said? I'll be back to hold you down. But I don't want to leave.
I don't want to leave. Baba dee ba dee.
It's funny because they gassed him up. Leave ba dee ba dee.
He really lost his mind. He lost his mind with the baba dee ba dee.
That song, Black Roses, though.
That sound like a song by like.
Black Roses.
By who?
Trey Songz. For this dying
Never heard
love.
Of it. That is, first of all,
for Ready?
First of all, don't piss me off with the lyrics. Well, turn it off quickly. Black of this love, turn it off. That should be, I'm ready.
That was on Ready.
I'm ready.
It's one, that's the thing.
That album pisses.
I'm ready.
Hey.
Who you think could say, who has a better I'm ready voice? Me or you?
Me, of course.
Get out of here. You're not, that's the problem, is that you think that you're funnier than me.
Yo side, east side,
of the bed.
She peed on my side.
Of the bed.
Of the bed. Yeah.
Yeah. I can miss him. Yeah, okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
Today, I am proud to announce New York City's first ever comprehensive AI policy for our public schools. City Hall's answer to those questions. It is the most comprehensive of its kind anywhere in the country. And it begins with a simple principle. Children need their teachers and human connection in order to learn and in order to grow. And they need to develop skills alongside their peers, build relationships with their teachers, and wrestle with tough problems on their own. The tech industry wants us to believe that AI in early education is not only inevitable, but that it is necessary. We do not see it that way. I have yet to see a study showing that AI is beneficial for students in elementary and middle school, with the exception, of course, of research sponsored by the very corporations that stand to profit. So beginning this school year, we will implement a one-year moratorium on generative AI for students in 2K through 8th grade.
Yes.
Put you down.
Put you on. But, put you down. I'm not, I'm like, it does something so crackheadish to my spirit because kids can't read. So why should you know how to use tools that can surpass
the same way
what your understanding already is? They can't even put together a sentence.
The same way they know how to use them phones.
Come on. You acting like somebody mama.
I am. Or somebody daddy.
No, I don't think that. I think it's before that. Before we even, I'm not saying parents shouldn't be concerned, but I'm saying that before we even get to the concern that parents feel, your kids, not your kids, but kids, they can't even read. They don't even know what apple sounds like. Babble.
That's a parent's problem. That's a parent's problem.
I'm not saying that it's not, but I mean,
but it's also
if we leave it at a parent's problem, where do we go as a nation?
Because it's only so much I can do 8 hours a day.
With 8 hours a day,
it's only so much the teachers.
You
can
have
do.
More than 8 hours a day to be a parent.
No. I'm not talking about the parents. I'm talking about the teachers.
The teachers, 1,000.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, let's step back. I do not think that teachers should be the sole responsibility of educating our children in the future of today. Just like you said, there's only 8 hours. And just like, okay, I might think, you know, let's just talk about slavery, right? I might think that my kids who are kindergartners or first graders, as a black parent, I might feel that they should be able to learn about these things a lot sooner. You might feel, I'm not saying that you're a different race or gender or whatever. You feel what you feel, same criteria as me. You might feel that they might need to learn about that later in life. Who is to say that either is wrong or right?
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to get rid of the critical race theory anyway.
I mean, we know that.
But no, I mean, if you go to like that, I mean, I think all of it, honestly, to be true, honestly, it starts from like 1 to 4. So if
a lot of stuff is gonna have to be taught at
home. No. I gotta say, like as a parent, a lot of stuff, those foundational years are critical.
Okay, what is foundation? I don't know. Like, can you explain to me? Because I don't have kids. Most kids talk to me like I don't have kids.
So when you go to like pre-K or kindergarten,
yeah, like your colors, the reason why
it starts off slow is because they are trying to get so many kids up to speed. Who don't know simple things.
But what is simple things and what is the up to speed?
ABCs, how to count, your name.
Your name, your mom's name, your dad's name, you know, your colors, like that?
Yeah, different stuff like that. Because it started
and this is for kindergarten. Okay.
Yeah. And so, because think about it, everybody doesn't have the luxury to send their kids to pre-K.
1,000%.
And pre-K 4.
You might not even have the time in your schedule.
Everybody don't have the ability to possibly have either one parent who has a remote job that makes enough money that could be ingrained mm-hmm. what their kids doing, or two, have two parents to where they can focus on that. or they are working.
And it doesn't even matter. You might be able to focus in on it, but guess what? You're just in the wrong district.
Well, also, not even that. A step further, sometimes they work from home, so they don't have nobody to watch the kids, so the kids on a tablet all day. Mm-hmm. On the TV all day.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of different things, especially with this generation of kids that comes into play with that. So you add in AI stuff. It's not that they need to understand, hey, how do I interact with a person? How do I read emotions? Oh, I shouldn't say that. When I come to a person, hey, how you doing? Like right now, Josh is in this phase of telling everybody, hey.
But he's like that age. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but so here's also the thing too.
How do you teach a someone that young? This is a serious question because I don't have my kids, big kids. So how do you teach a kid, you know, that's vulnerable and that young on what a safe person is like in a not great safe question. Person
that,
is like.
So around two is kind of when they go in that stranger danger phase. Like right now, at 2 years old, unless Josh can really just see your spirit is pure and he never met you, he's going to be shy. It's going to take him a while to warm up to you. Mm-hmm. And so just like when I was little, I remember them telling me, hey, like even if they say they know your daddy or
my mom used to walk me through those scenarios, though, like, if somebody tell you they're going to take you away and you're going to have fun, what you going to say? Or, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Like, she used to, I mean, it was, to me, she was playing, but now that I'm older.
That's the way that you have to teach kids.
But that's the language that they talk to kids in.
Yeah.
Is your mom nice to you?
Yeah.
You know?
So you have to go through and say, you're a stranger, I don't know you. Or they kind of lie and say, oh, it's okay, I still don't know you. I'm going to go to my mom. Or you tell them, it depends where they are. If you're at school, you go find a teacher. You go find an administrator. You go find somebody. And then you got to be careful with them.
Yeah.
So it's, that's what.
It's a lot.
That actually just,
it's not a one-stop shop, is what you're saying.
That just made me think about once you go into Stranger Thing, then you have to go, unfortunately, to the other uncomfortable conversations with your kids about boundaries.
Good touch, bad touch.
Hey,
you
privacy.
Know what I mean?
Yeah. Nobody shouldn't be touching you there. Like all those different things that you got to tell your kids. Like, and sometimes.
But from your experience, because you have, you know, some across the spectrum, do you feel like it is a, it should start here, or do you feel like it will depend on their maturity and
both?
What's going on in the household?
Everything.
Yeah.
Everything somebody know, like, a lot of things sometimes, friends they have sometimes grow them up a little faster, but.
Friends?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And sometimes a kid will start saying, hey, I want privacy. We'll sit down, you have to say, hey, don't do that or do this. And it definitely starts.
I will remember when my little cousin, one of my best cousins that's my age, her baby was going to her first sleepover. And I was there for the weekend that she was going. And we was in the bathroom like, when you go in the bathroom, lock the door. And if somebody open up that door, you better cuss them out. Not that I want her to be that kid.
Did you go to sleepovers when you were little?
Yeah, but we practiced at the house before she even got there. She was in the bathroom and I was knocking on the door repeatedly and I tried to open the door just to kind of see, you know, what she was going to give as a little girl to kind of protect herself. You know what I mean? And I said, you need to get angrier. You need to be louder.
Yeah. Yeah. And I only had one person, shout out to Tevin, if Tevin ever see this. We used to go to Tevin's house. I think
you only had one house that you could go to?
No, he wasn't family. This is a guy I knew.
But one house that was your friend that you can go to.
No, it was a couple. It was like two people.
Yeah, I had about a three,
But I stayed over there. It was fine.
Weeks in a row.
The funny thing is, with boys, nobody wants to go to sleep because whoever went to sleep first, somebody's going to do a prank or something on them. So it was like somebody poured water on somebody.
It was like anything.
Yogurt. Like it was a whole bunch of stuff that was going on.
Didn't want to happen to you while you were asleep.
Exactly. But back in the day, shout out to them Blazing Wings from Walmart. Them Tyson Blazing Wings, everybody, their mama had them. They went up. So, shout out to them.
I had a lot of friends who houses I could not go to. My mom was very specific about I know their mom or I don't know their mom, mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that.
I don't either. I don't either. But shout out to Mom Donnie for.
I'm not mad
for keeping it G on everybody. What's going on in the world? Let me see. We got a couple of things. I told Kiera for sure we were going to react to her. So let's go to Kiera and what she has to say. It's really about AI resumes and why people are finding issues. You got to chill just now?
I did. Sorry. It's the TikTok.
Your AI-generated resume might be making you look painfully average. Okay, your resume probably isn't that bad because you use AI, but the problem is everybody else used AI too. So now the recruiter looking at your application has read 2,000 of the same value propositions. Strategic cross-functional leader, measurable business impact, collaboration, yada, yada, yada. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure it sounds fantastic, but it all sounds...
My girl got on her TLC clothes.
I was just finna say, it's the tone for me. You know I love when my girl talk.
No, I'm saying, like, you know, on Creep when they had the silk pajamas
on? I seen that one. Yep.
That's what like, she got on. So I creep. All right,
AI has made it incredibly easy and cheap to take a boring average resume and make it look polished. You can improve the language, optimize for a job description, even add all the buzzwords and keywords that AI usually filters for, all within a couple of minutes. Which means polish itself is becoming a weaker career signal. So how do you make your resume more valuable? Simple. Stop using AI to make yourself sound more impressive. This means using AI to make your resume sound more specific. Stop focusing on the what you did and focus on what actually changed because of the work you did. What problems did you solve? What decision did you influence? How much time, complexity, money did you save from taking action on the job? And if you don't have a clean metric, specificity still works. Talk about the scale of the work that you influenced or the risk that was associated with it, the people that you helped influence. And these are things that you can actually talk about in an interview that you can't really fake using an AI-generated resume. Sure, AI can help you with the wording and structure for your resume, but it cannot fake or create the evidence for you that you have to prove in an interview.
Nah, mic drop.
Come on,
no, we don't. We ain't got a sheet eight down, but we got a
eight down.
As a person who did so many resumes, she is 100%, but I will actually let her in on the secret. A lot of these people didn't achieve nothing.
I was just about, you have to help people even understand what their accomplishments were because they're not even thinking that big. And that's the part that makes it difficult.
You know what I need the sound was?
What?
Instead of you thinking small, you need to think big.
You need to think big.
That's what I need.
You need to think big.
That's what I need. But no, so it goes into that. People don't have metrics. They don't write down their brag sheets.
I will say that if... I'm telling you, and I'm sure you heard people say this, you should be taking a weekly or biweekly tracker of your accomplishments for the week, and it will help you translate those accomplishments for the week into the accomplishments for the month that you can share out quarterly to your leadership when it comes time to prove your value at the company. A lack of doing so will really, 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 especially if you're just not doing it, it will put you behind because you already got to think really hard to get a good bullet. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For the month or two bullets. If you only can get two bullets, it's going to and you had 20 meetings.
Yeah. No, I feel you. But I think that also is that some people, depending on their job, like that's kind of like what's happening.
Yeah.
On like if they actually are. Combined with that is they just don't know how to word the resume. Everybody's using
it's the wording.
Everybody's using these AI tools. And like I said, remember I talked about the guy and I read verbatim what he said. You had AI check these resumes and it told you it was good, but I'm looking at it right now and I'm telling you mid, skip, skip.
Because people are difficult. They think that the reflection piece is going to look like one thing. And the reflection piece does not look like exactly identical. If I'm asking you, HD, about your resume and you only aligned yourself to be able to answer two questions from your resume, that does not help you and it does not help me.
Not only, before you even get to that piece, if you rely on AI 100%, you will fail. 100%.
You will fail. Because
that's what I'm saying. You're believing them and their biases to say that your resume is good based on how AI likes to do resumes. And I'm telling you, this not it because I'm looking at your skills, I'm looking at your resume, and I'm seeing a disconnect on your resume.
But I think people lack the ability to have faith truly in the people that they're reaching or seeking to help them achieve a next level. For example, HD, if you're my coach, right, mm-hmm. and you're trying to help me get employed with a higher paying job because I've been unemployed for X amount of time, but I don't believe in you, HD. I already can't interview. I suck, but I don't believe in you. What is the point? What are you going to tell me that's going to help alleviate that gap of me not believing in myself and then not believing in you?
No. I think that's a fact. But also, some of these people, they're not even clients. What the whole issue is that they believe artificial intelligence more than they believe humans.
I agree with you.
And so that is the whole issue, because all they hear is AI so smart. Mythos did this. Claude did this. ChatGPT did this with whatever, Sonnet or what all these things, they got. Oh, look what Copilot did. They're still forgetting, hey, all these things is because they're sourcing information that's put out by humans.
Yep.
It's machine learning on what the humans say.
I just saw something that Chat had won a Google's, or not Google, it was a search engine. They had won some designation as being a search engine based upon some criteria. Mm-hmm. And that's how we should look at it as. Just like you would Google what makes up the color blue, the same type of thing you would Google when it comes to answering an interview question that's related to something that is important and of value to you in your career.
Yeah, no, I think that's facts. Now, as we go back to the reactions, I think this was pretty golden. I got two. It's going to be about hiring and then also the tech market. And I think this video, I'm going to change how fast it gets played.
I have a theory about average performers, and there's some data that backs this, but if you're average performer, if you're what we call a B or C player, not only are you not good enough to get hired in this market, but you might not be bad enough to get hired in this market as well. You see, when you look at a market like we're in, someone who comes to work, does the job, doesn't excel or go above and beyond, but just does the job and does it well, typically blends in with the other 400 to 500 applicants. There's nothing special making you stand out. So the A players obviously have that, right? These are the people that are above and beyond. They excel. They're the top performers. They're award-winning, all of these things. Companies want these people. But the unique thing is, it's really difficult to tell the difference between an A player and an F player. Because F players, people who are not good at their job, they get into a position and they do not perform, they're typically really good interviewers. There's a morality judgment there, a lack of morality in their judgment, and they don't mind lying about what they've done. They don't mind taking credit for other people's work.
Facts.
They don't mind embellishing or even flat out making up things about their background to make them seem competent and qualified. And they're typically really good at selling themselves to interviewers. And so the middle ground person, the average employee who comes in and explains what they do, if they even get a chance for a conversation, is getting crushed in this market. But the weird thing is they're getting beat by people who are really good at their job, but they're also getting beat by people who have no business being in that position. They're just really good interviewers.
Hey.
I'm not mad. Down.
So, yeah, he did. And to couple that, I totally agree with that. I found so many people who are great at what they do, but they just do not sell themselves well at all. And it's a big issue.
I mean, you cannot even you spend a whole lifetime not knowing how to sell yourself
well.
Yeah,
think about how many people women and men that look nice, but they are horrible on dates. They bad at small talk.
Forget a date. We're talking about rent.
We're talking about what?
Rent. Rent.
What about rent?
If you can't go on no date, you can't pay your rent.
But before we even get to that, I'm just talking about a person meet somebody at the store. They don't know how to have small talk. They could be amazing guy.
A lot of people don't know how to lollygag. But that's what I call small talk.
Or you mean dilly dally?
Lollygag, dilly dally, they cousins.
So yeah, you don't know that. If you don't know how to say
okay, hey, what is dilly dally? Come on, let's go through a dilly dally scenario.
I just say they say dilly dally. What's called? Like I watch all. It'd be funny because I watch all these little different Riz videos of the guys acting like they rizzing the women up, and this stuff be like hilarious. I'm like, y'all be fumbling for real. But honestly, just regular conversation. Hey, how you doing? Okay, cool. What's your name?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You normally work out here. You normally come here. No, I'm just here for a weekend or whatever. You know.
But people lack personality.
You can crack a little joke. So I'm here for a good time, not a long time. See
do
if
you
they
think
laugh.
It needs to be depth? Present.
Depends.
I don't think it always needs to be.
Depends
depth.
On how long you're going to be talking. Because like some stuff is the elevator pitch. You see him in there and be like, hey, I'm only in town for a couple of days, whatever, but I would love to know. The worst thing the person can say is no.
No. When you're doing an elevator
but
pitch.
But the same thing, you just got to have a little bit of personality to it. It can't sound like a robot, right? Granted, there are people who have different disabilities where stuff is going to come out choppy like a robot. And there is a thing called discernment where you can understand, like, okay, I think this person got this going on. But if I'm cool with that, let's see what the date going to be.
Yeah.
About. If they not, then pass on. It's just one of the things where, hey, you live and you learn. Shoot.
I'm screaming.
What Glow said, Shoot a shoot.
She definitely said.
Duke Dennis, what's down with, or something like that.
She said something like that. It was close. My turn.
I'm gonna go back to the videos, cause we covered most of the big stuff on the board.
We did.
Yeah. Look at it.
What we talk about?
All that.
No, we didn't.
We talked about McKesson, ID scan, Gen Z boomers, Reddits. Like we're up like unofficial.
We didn't talk about ID scan.
Yes, we did. That's the first thing I did. Unofficially, so unofficially, I started recording this before this. This is on 3 hours. This is on 2.
Oh, okay. We have been recording for a really long time.
Yeah. Think about it, the last time you talked to your sister.
Long time.
Exactly. Ain't going to be a quiet room no more. Move, Lee. You don't get in front of a black man in a buffet line.
Do you like the clumps or Nutty Professor?
Yeah.
Don't tell the truth. Tell me right now. Would you rather watch Nutty Professor or the clumps?
They both the same thing.
They're not the same thing. There's two different movies, and it's a part one and a part two.
I probably would want to watch number one over two.
I'm gonna watch number two with Janet Jackson.
But that's not them. Not my favorite Eddie movies are different movies. But
like what?
He got one where he's a cop and he is a negotiator for people that are held hostage. Life, of
like
course.
Like a for real one.
Daddy Daycare.
Daddy Daycare is so good.
Beverly Hills Cop.
No. Do you like I Am Martin? Bye. Never mind.
Yeah, because I don't know what you're talking about. You see, I looked at you like. I looked at you like.
You looked at me like, no.
I looked at you like Governor Tate looked at Tariq.
Like, no, for real.
The tech and cyber market is not screwed or impossible to get into. Just this year, IFC published a document saying that 56% of people said that AI is taking entry-level roles, while 53% AI is actually creating a lot more entry-level roles. Even Cisco's workforce research said that hiring managers are actually having a tougher time finding senior-level talent than entry-level. 45% of security leaders are saying that there's a skills gap. People just don't have the technical depth, while 48% are saying that people don't even have the soft skills required to be in technology or cybersecurity. Even Sands, who's the creator of the GIAC certifications, is saying that we no longer have a people shortage in the field. We have a skill shortage. But you come online and you see everybody's talking about this certification and that certification, and you need this degree and you need that degree. You don't need certification on top of degree on top of degree. What you need are skills. So here's what you do to get those skills. You need to build an AWS or an Azure environment. You need to secure that environment. You also need to investigate actual logs. Crazy. Focus on your log reading and your log experience. You can even automate some security tasks with Python. These are great examples of how you can gain actual experience and list it as actual experience on your resume. So the next time you hear someone say, oh, it's so hard to get into cyber. Oh, I have to get this certification and that certification. Stop focusing on all the certifications. Stop focusing on influencers who actually don't know anything and build up your skill set. That is how you get noticed. That is how you get into the field.
So he's actually based on what he said, I'm taking my face value. He's a senior manager. And I agree. But there are not a lot of managers like him that take what you do versus like the lack of skill sets and experience that you have and stuff. So I totally agree with him when we're doing that, just because it shows a lot how, you know, like, for example, he's talking about AWS and Azure. If you're AWS, you got CloudTrail, GuardDuty, build that up. Now, here's what you can do. If you don't feel like setting up Splunk, this is what I did, and I got to rebuild my home lab. I had a Sentinel home lab already that I had built out from, like, following one of Josh Metacore's walkthroughs, and then I already had an AWS account. And I just figured out how to forward my CloudTrail logs to Sentinel. So now I can start doing that, do some crap in AWS, get over there, make some detections, investigate them, all the other stuff, and secure my environment and have all these different things. If I make network changes, if I start sending out different things, so connecting with SSH, all these CloudTrail logs are going to fire. And now you talk about how you investigate them. Then the cool point is, hey, how do you write up your investigation? How do you write up reports? And if you learn those skills, those are things you can also share. Like when you're getting ready for an interview, the recruiter always says, hey, you got anything you want to share with the hiring manager or the team? Share the stuff.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It's very important to share stuff, especially the stuff that you think you shouldn't share, because nobody else is going to share that stuff.
And I'm going to try to remember to put it right here. I did a consultation with a guy who's been in my Discord for a while. I think he's been watching my content for a while. And he told me straight up, like, yo, I was listening to your advice. I started posting what I was doing on LinkedIn, and the internship he currently has, he initially got, rejected him for it. However, he said the hiring manager reached out to him directly because he was putting his work or what he was doing on LinkedIn, and he got hired based off that. So you have to figure out what the equalizer is. You can either cry or put in the work. Somebody will notice the work. I ain't gonna say it's gonna always work. It's not a 1-to-1. Ain't a 1-to-10. It might not even be 1-to-100. It may be 1-to-1,000.
Agree.
Or hold on, what Aaliyah, don't you got a song called 1-to-1,000,000?
Mm-hmm.
It might be 1-to-1,000,000.
Your love is a 1-to-1,000,000.
So it might be 1-to-1,000,000. So just go off that. So that's what I would say for you to do.
That's what I did. That's how I got my internship, was based off of some mediocre things I was doing through my...
I wouldn't call it mediocre because nobody else was doing it.
I mean, nobody else was talking about it. Plenty of people were doing it, but they weren't verbalizing or putting it pen to paper like I was.
That means they wasn't doing it.
Clock it.
That means they weren't doing it. So let me see. Let me double check something real quick. What you over there typing up your password?
You know it. I'm thinking about that artichoke. I'm not even finna lie to you.
I know. I think the last one I want to talk about is like social. I mean, not social media. I'm sorry. Corporate America is not really for high performers.
Ooh, let's get it. As a high performer.
Big toe. You remember? Did you watch Jamie Foxx show? Were you a Jamie Foxx show person?
Immediately, not enough to remember any songs or anything that he sang. Well, except for "Well, it's been."
No. So he, somebody's had a reunion and R. Kelly couldn't come, so he dressed up as R. Kelly.
Please.
And you know,
a joke already.
R. Kelly had a song called Down Low. So
Jamie Foxx. On a down low. Oh,
but Jamie Foxx changed it to Big Toe.
Please get on my face. Please.
Big Toe.
Keep it on a big toe.
Nah, I'll let you hear because it's hilarious to me. I'm so childish. Here we go.
Corporate is not designed for true high performers, and then it ends up being a high performer's nightmare realized, because high performers' nature is to see a problem and fix it, and you're going to want to do it, and there's just no bullshit around it. You're going to see it, you're going to call out the truth, and suggest different avenues to fix the problem. However, that is not what corporate wants at the end of the day. They continue to want yes men, moldable people that they can now create as a little army of minions. They need those bullshit problems to exist. That is how they keep people spinning and cycling in the loop. So if you are a high performer, I always suggest take it a step back and just keep your head down. Do the bare minimum of what you have to do to stay off of a freaking shit list. But it is no longer on you. It is never has been to try and fix problems that were just inherited by you from a broken system.
Okay, what do you think about the broken system?
I think she's right, but it's just not the right advice for everybody.
Okay.
There's a way to do
it. No, I'm 1,000% with you, because the same advice that will work for one of my little cousins is not going to work for my mom and her household.
Yeah. So it just depends, right? I think you can go in and be a high performer, but also not make people look bad.
1,000%.
And that is something. Somebody commented in some of my video, and I was trying to explain to them. It's like, if I go in with the intention of just doing my stuff and just performing well, that won't make people look bad. If I go in a way of purposely at meetings and different things or an email chains to make them look bad.
You know where people are falling short.
That's where you create enemies. But if it don't have nothing to do with that and I'm just showing up and I'm doing a good job, that pays off dividends. That actually works, because I was like, I did it. It works. Or if you get a place where you can start off where everybody starts at zero, it works. So you can be a high performer, but it just has to be in the right system. If you in certain regulated fields where, like, you can mention all these things and just say forever, you will get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, as in the words of my guy Pat, I just work here. And that's what you got to do. Do really good work on whatever your work is. Anything above and beyond, hey, do what you will with this information, but try it out. If it ain't working, just get your check and just, you know, hopefully survive the different layoff waves. That's what I would tell them.
Yeah, agreed.
To be honest. I had a video one time. I think I called it the maximum bare minimum or something like that. It's like where you're doing
a lot of people get by in life by giving the bare minimum.
Yeah.
And that's like most people do not want to do more than the bare minimum. Most people want to do the bare minimum to get to where they think is where is an evil playing field. But it's not really even.
Right.
Because it's your bare minimum. So why would you think that your bare minimum is somebody else's hard work and effort and goodness?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you got to think about it, though. That don't work for everybody.
It doesn't.
We got to be twice as good.
We got to be thrice.
So, you know. Speaking of, that reminds me of it's a YouTube channel I'm gonna put you on, but she reacts like all the shows we grew up on, and she really gives a nuanced take on like, hey, how this was problematic thinking or this, and she's like did recent one. She recently did one on Bernie Mac, and she liked my comment because I said
it was like a like she does like clips.
No, like, it's a full video. Okay. It's a full breakdown,
but I like said, of a scenario in the show.
No, just like a classic conflict. Just break down the whole show.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, America, because you know Bernie would always talk to America. Was I wrong?
Yeah.
You said, what'd he say? You're going to beat them until the white meat show?
And, my mom.
And you got to think about it. Bernie was a boomer.
A real boomer. An OG boomer.
He's he was a little bit older than my dad, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Or he might be.
But think about the differences between a boomer and a Gen Z parent and a millennial parent.
No, you know what's funny? I seen some stupid stuff on there where they were trying to say like, oh, the millennials are raising all the Gen Zs. I said,
they're what?
Millennials are raising all the Gen Z kids.
Are raising? We don't want them.
And I was like, nah, that's definitely not true. I was like, my parents, my dad's a boomer, and my mom is like in between of being a boomer and Gen X because my dad's born 64, my mom's 68.
So boomer, Gen X, then
millennial.
Millennial, and then Gen Z.
And then now Gen Alpha.
Please get it out of my face. What year is that? Turn the mic off for that.
I know my brothers and sister are all Gen Z because they're 2004. 2005.
That's my sister. Wait, what is it?
I'm saying they're born in 2004.
What's it called?
What, Gen Z?
No.
Gen Alpha?
Gen Alpha. My sister is that too. She's Gen Alpha.
Really? How old is she?
She was born in 2004.
No, that's not Gen Alpha.
You said 2004. No. You literally just said my brother, my sister's is born in 2004.
No. I said they Gen Z.
No, you literally said Gen Alpha. How are they Gen Z and we're Gen Z?
Gen Alpha?
Gen
Alpha started in 2010.
Oh.
Gen Z must end in 2008. So my sister's the cutoff for...
No, what's before that? Or, like, younger?
Gen Z.
Before that?
Millennials.
Before 2010?
Gen Z.
Before 2004?
Gen Z. Gen Z started, like, 1996 or 97, depending on how you're looking at
it. Gen Z? Ain't no way.
Because
I thought my millennials were 1998.
No.
1990s.
No.
90s.
Millennials started 1980... And some places say stops at 94.
No, that's right. That's right. Because I'm born in 94. So it's that's
but
right.
But then some
that's
places
right.
have it at 95.
I've heard that too.
So like,
that
that's why I was arguing with Lee. I was like, Lee, you really Gen Z. Man, no, I'm not, man. I ain't no Gen Z.
When's Lee's birthday? 94?
I think Lee just made 30.
Really? Oh, Lee, you a baby.
Yeah, he just made 30. So I was just saying all that to say, like, it is, like, still boomers that raise Gen Z.
No, facts. I mean, you don't have to have a sibling. But you don't have to have a sibling that fall. Just because you are a boomer doesn't mean you got kids that fall in each respective.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. It was just hilarious that they said that. But no, guys, this has been a very interesting episode of The Textual Talk. Hopefully you see this, you like, shared it out. Help us get to, I think our goal right now, we want to get to like 500 subs. So help us get to 500 subs.
1,000.
We can get to 1,000.
Thank you.
But I got to be realistic.
I'm being realistic.
We almost at 200.
I'm being realistic. Thank you. I see how many people are watching. It's not that the people are not watching. The people just need to subscribe. Yeah. The people are watching.
But you know, it takes people to come like.
Like a couple times, a few times in order.
Yeah. But I appreciate y'all for tuning in and watching the episode. Until next time, we out. Peace.